finally brought you here. Behold, Forge the Narrative.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Forge the Narrative. My name is Paul, your host. I'm joined by Tanya Gates.
Hey, everybody.
Adam Camilleri and Red Powell.
Wake up, Adam.
No, you. You wake up first.
Oh, hey, what up, everybody?
That's the stuff. That's the juice I need to get through this.
Told you, Adam. I'll be your energy bus today. We got you.
That's it. You guys got me.
We are the Bell Lost Souls podcast, and we're even more spread out than normal nowadays. Not nowadays, but today during this particular recording. But we could not talk about stuff that's happened and stuff that's coming up.
We just actually like to torture Adam, so that's why we're recording right now.
Yeah. I mean, that's... If there's anything, my next level enjoyment is achieved at Adam's behest.
The hedgerow my compatriots deciding to dance around right now is the fact that I am in Europe. I mean, blessed lucky me being able to come to Europe. So
must be rough.
Time. Yeah, but it's 4 a.m. So it's and I did wake up at 3 a.m. because as Paul likes to say.
Yeah, time zones are hard. Like I mentioned, we are the Bell Lost Souls podcast. Thank you to our new Patreon subscribers. It really helps us be possible. Let's just get the show out. Let's just do all this kind of stuff. Really appreciate y'all supporting us in that way. Of course, it's not the only way to support us. Likes, comments, 5-star reviews. Keep them coming. Again, that is the fuel that provides us with the energy and the joy and the love.
And the validation.
Yeah, that one the most.
It does. It does mean a lot. So... last week was a very large tournament. You know, we're like in the midst of things now. Big tournaments are happening. New Edition is happening. And Red, you were actually, we mentioned you on when Adam and I were doing part two to the Meta Chaser show that we do on, one another show, but we have a part two we do. It's like a recap of events. And while you didn't make any of the podiums, what you did is we go 5-1 with a faction that people are largely saying is, you know, not ready for prime time. And that's the World Eaters.
33% win rate must not be that good, huh?
Well, I think you're all of it. Like you are the 33%.
Dang. No. There's plenty of other great players out there. Me personally, honestly, I started, this is not the first time I've said this, but I started every game and I tried to be as open as possible in regards that, hey, look, I'm just a level 4 NPC. I'm going to charge right at you. And all you got to do is play tower defense and shoot me. And if you let me get you, like, it's going to be a little intense for a minute. I'll take probably, you know, a little extra time in my first couple move phases. And then either I'm not on the table anymore or I'm fighting you. And we just kind of go off from there. And it should be a great game. So, you know, good luck, have fun, please kill me, and we'll continue. And I with all of my opponents, I had amazing games, every single game. 5-1, far surpassed the expectations I had. And honestly, beyond points and all that, I tried to tell my opponents my real objective was that I was hopefully one of the most casual players that they would have played against and the most enjoyable games that they would have had the entire weekend. And so I hope that carried true for everybody I played with, because I was trying for that. Now, you know, despite the World Eaters and Angron, and I brought Angron back 3 times in one game. so, you know, having an extra 1,245 points, I'm not complaining, you know? I get it. It's kind of crazy. I mean, is it the perfect army? No, by no means is it. Was I was getting shot off the table by dreadnoughts, and you know, so I played Space Marines first round. Second round was Guard, which is where I got smashed. Robert Moreland, awesome guy, ended up taking best overall. He crushed me, and then you know went on to essentially just keep going from there. I think he only lost one game in his 5th round, but he was doing awesome. You know, clearly an amazing player. It was a great game. I loved it.
With
Guard, absolutely. And he took, much to his credit, as much as I love it, he took not a Shadow Sword, but a Bane Sword, which sat there and just picked up my stuff. And it was really good. He set
Bane Sword do?
So it's not a Shadow Sword like Volcano Cannon, but it still has the massive gun on front, which I completely respect. In the world of Baneblade chassis, if I had an order of precedence, it would be Shadow Sword for my personal favorite, and then it would be the Bane Sword right after, because it's the only other one that has the massive main cannon, right? And what it does is it's a pretty good blast weapon. I want to say it's I'm just throwing it out there, like D6 plus 4. Oh, there you go. Read it off.
Right here. It's a good one. Quake Cannon Blast ignores cover, 72-inch range, which is the whole table. D6 plus 6. Hitting on fours, strength 16, -4 damage. And then the special ability, each time an attack made with this model's Quake Cannon destroys an enemy model that has the Deadly Demise ability, that model's Deadly Demise ability inflicts a mortal wounds on a D6 roll of a 3+ instead of a 6+.
Wow.
So you're likely to do a little bit of splash damage to your opponent. Kind of akin to like the Harpoon used to last edition. You know, you would kill, like the Harpoon would do like splash models. Well, yeah. This kind of does that. It's actually pretty sick.
It's awesome.
It's a lot of shots as well. Like -7 is a good, healthy amount of shots.
That's it is. Nice and so he rocked me with that. And then he had some Hellhounds and everything. And so it was really cool. I mean, and we got into it, and that was hammer and anvil deployment. And he did the right thing, setting up on the far back edge and feeding like a couple things up front. And then he had, you know, the Gaunt's Ghost. I couldn't have been more excited. And he used Gaunt's Ghost, and they came in and they killed my Demon Prince, which I'm, again, was equally continued to be excited about that, despite the fact I lost my Demon Prince.
There are no losers in this game. It's a...
No. It was good. It was an awesome game. And that was the one that, and honestly, in round three, you know, Robert and I were looking at each other and like, oh, the score's only, I mean, if this tells you anything, in round three, the score was like 53-54 with Robert up by like 1 point. The score would then only continue to exceed by round five. I think I finished that one out with like 64 points. So in the next two rounds, I only did so much because he picked me up, and then he finished out with like 95. So it was an awesome game. After that was more Space Marines, where I'll tell you, watching Angron pick up two Dreadnoughts, Primaris Dreadnoughts, in my first game, and then doing it again in the second game was pretty exciting. I enjoyed watching that happen. And then fourth game was Custodes. Man, I saw the power of the Custodes, and only thanks to the good graces. Again, you know, some of these games you play, like the Ritual. Have y'all had the opportunity to play the Ritual mission yet?
What's the special role on that one?
That's the one where like there's the objective in the middle, and then like in your shooting phase, you set up exactly 9 inches away another objective in your shooting phase.
Oh yeah, yeah. You spawn more objectives. Yeah, with you. Yep.
And so to the guy who's playing Alex, to his credit, he realized after while I was trying to set mine up in the second turn, he realized he set his up incorrectly. And I admit, and I'll tell him, you know, he's on Facebook and everything. I hit him up because I already said it before. I insisted that he be able to, you know, be able to set it up and be able to push it on. And he said, you know, the game had already progressed too far beyond. And so he didn't get that second. He didn't get his other objective set up. And so he was playing Custodes without that objective really on his side of the fight, which significantly hurt him. I mean, and that was an unfortunate mistake, but you know, he played through it, and he played through it with grace and a really good attitude. And he ended up tabling me. And yet I was still able to, for, you know, one way or the other, pull it off with like a 53-30 score, but he tabled me in round five. And so it was a really exciting game. And that's the game that I actually brought Angron back three times. And his, what are the tanks that the Custodes have with big guns on top? What are those?
Gladius.
Oh, man. So he had two of those. And essentially, I'd bring Angron on. He would make a charge. He made his charge every single time, which is pretty exciting. And then the Gladius, just both of them just picked him up. And he walked off the table and then came back. It was really good. It's really fun.
You just like to imagine he just walks on. He's like, these guys still here. Damn.
And then the next game was Gene Stealer Colt. Man, like it really... You know, I've been playing some games, but I hadn't really got to see a lot of this stuff in play. And the Custodes, like, stayed in there to such a crazy degree. It blew me away just how durable the Custodes were. I mean, they played like you would want them to play, in my opinion. And then you play against the GSC and this ability for them to just keep coming back and stuff. And, you know, you've all talked about it. You know, Adam, I'm sure you've said plenty about the Gene Stealer Colt capability. Mm. And me, you know, of course, just unfortunately being a bad person, largely disregarding whatever important things you said, I'm looking at this army trying to figure out how it's working, and he keeps putting these but he keeps putting these blips down, and I was like, man, I really got to figure out what to do about those things.
What do those do?
What do I? What does it mean to me?
Yeah. Well, so after and Diego, awesome player again. Like, I was just so lucky to have such good experiences across the board. And I think after I killed about 200 models, I finally figured out I needed to go get rid of those blips.
I should do something about those. They're annoying.
It was fun though. I mean, it was a really good game. I had a great time. The best thing I could figure out, because someone came over to the table at one point and was like, "It doesn't look like you've killed anything." And Diego pointed out, he's like, "Well, you see where all the models are around the corners where the blips are? Like, that's everything that's already died at least once." And it was a excessive amount of models that I was cutting through, and so
to mind their own business.
it was a good run. I had to sit in the middle, because as soon as I wiped him off one part, he'd start coming in on the other part, and so I was getting kind of yo-yoed back and forth while he was picking me up with. I mean, the Gene Steel Colt has some pretty amazing weaponry. I gotta say, like the bombs and grenades and stuff they have, like that stuff's no joke. But the bikes, oh my gosh, those bikes. I love that, like how they deal mortal wounds when they stop moving and stuff like that. I mean, it's just really good combination of mechanics that I'm not going to sit here. I mean, I was playing World Eaters. I'm not going to sit here and say that I felt like the army was broken. I just had to keep fighting. And it went, it was a tough match. It was really tough. And then my last round, you know, it was an interesting transition. I went from Gene Steeler Colt to Tyranids, and that was a hard fought fight. I mean, we had a really good time. You know, at that point, we've talked about it before. You play in a tournament, and you know, like, you know, you've lost a game already, and you're not playing for finals or what have you, and you just want to end on a good note. And I really was able to do that with Brad, my final opponent. Had amazing time. We ended really strong. Great game going back and forth. And it came down to 72-73, and all he had to do was put all of the remaining shots he had into my Demon Prince. And if he had killed my Demon Prince, he would have got Bring It Down, and he probably would have won by 75-73. But I, you know, for all the other saves that I would fail in that game and other games, this is the one time where I think I only failed one out of maybe 12 4-up rolls or so. So I got it.
Wow.
Extremely lucky for that Demon Prince to hang in there. And yep. So that was it. World Eaters 5-1. Angron was tons of fun. Blessings of Khorne. Awesome. I love playing Khorne Yahtzee. It's a lot of fun.
That's where you're trying to fish for some sixes, right? To
bring Angron back, or to get, you know, two sixes as advance and charge. Or I'll tell you what, surprisingly, I kept going for the triples that gave me the 6-up feel no pain. I ended up wanting that a lot. That was a big one for me. So I ran with that one quite a bit, actually. So sustained hits would come in every once in a while, but the 2-inch movement, advance and charge, like that was big, especially being able to manipulate it with some of the stuff I had, like the enhancement that allows me to pick up all the dice and re-roll all of them in one go. And then the number of Khorne Berserkers I had really helped, because the icons allow me to pick up an individual dice, and I can do it after the favored enhancement allows me to re-roll all of them, and then I can pick up onesies and twosies depending on how many Khorne Berserkers are on objectives at the time, and I can, you know, roll a couple here to manipulate it. And honestly, like when I wanted to bring Angron back, it typically tended to work out just over time. And so
it was your weekend.
It was good. It was a good run, and I really, again, appreciate the people put on that event. Did an amazing job. I always had a great time seeing. For this is the second year they've run the Lone Star Open, and it was awesome. Had a blast. Can't wait to go back again next year.
A sub competition, you know, I mean, a friendly rivalry with the Armed Forces branches. Is that right?
Correct. Yeah, no, it's awesome. And so, like, when you go, you can essentially register for whichever branch you support. And last year, the Marines took it. I mean, you know, when your motto is something along the lines of the few and the proud, like, I mean, there's something to be proud of. They did really well. Robert Moreland was one of those people that was playing on behalf of the Marines, and all the branches came out, and it's always great, really good showing, and, you know, the time to get to talk to people, and the appreciation in general of the event and all is it's very humbling. And so the theme of that event was a really big deal, of course, given my own profession and the people that were there to support. There's some really awesome people that you know, there's a couple nonprofits and stuff like that that there to support service members and veterans and everything, and I just really appreciate the everybody coming out to support. So great event. Look forward to it again next year. Can't wait. And really glad to meet the people I did there. And for anybody else, you know, they do it. It's just outside of Dallas. Really great venue, and the nearby area is awesome. And so had a blast. Can't wait.
And you mentioned the Astra Militarum taking overall, but then I think Eldari took the top battle point slot.
They did. I mean, it was cool. I mean, you know, Chaos Space Marines were up there in the top two, but yeah, Eldari did take the top, like, best general kind of position. Guard taking best overall. There were, you know, there were some awesome Knights players in
and
there.
And that's a combined of hobby and battle points for overall.
Correct. Yeah, for sure. The best painted was amazing too.
Oh, what was the best painted?
Space Marines. And so his board was remarkable. Now, there were some amazing display boards. I wish I'd taken a picture of this, had the wherewithal to do it because of how good it is. So he has like this like marshalling area of a Space Marines company for the Ultramarines. And he's like added banners for every event, hand painted banners that are put on there that for every event he's taken it to. And so it's kind of like a campaign kind of wall. It's amazing. It looks really good. It's just, and the army's fantastic looking. He did an awesome job with that. There's a lot of good stuff that these, the folks, if you've seen them, the hobby goblins, you see them a lot at, you know, in support of the FLG events and whatnot, but they show up and they have a bunch of 3D printed like 40K weapons. And they did like a scavenger hunt where they had bolter rounds that were numbered that were all over the place. And so there was like the scavenger hunt going on in the background, which is pretty cool. I mean, the bolter rounds were like, you know, up 12 feet on the wall or something like that. And so if you noticed it, you got a picture of it, you shared it on their Instagram or Facebook or whatever, you know, they gave you credit in the hunt. It was pretty cool. Very cool. Yeah, it was fun.
I was going to talk briefly about the Eldari. That they're pretty challenging to play against right now.
Yeah, if you heard somehow, I don't know how, but I won't say I ducked them, but just the way the odds played out, I didn't run into any Eldari or Imperial Knights personally, and I'm sure that you know, you'd say that would factor in to one degree or another. But they seem to be doing really well out there for lots of different reasons that we've discussed here or there.
Yeah, and as far as like good terrain matters a lot, and we know that the FLG events have good terrain, and there's also player placed terrain in that, and there was a twist on the player placed. I've been a somewhat of a vocal opponent of player placed terrain in match play events, not events specifically. Like you can set up narratively, or you can, as long as you're placing it, you know, I guess symmetrically or whatever. Like that's, I'm more of a favor of that. But I've often thought that you can really get over on your opponent when you get the opportunity to place what might be like the one favorable piece of terrain. But they had a different take on it.
Yeah. So and I like this a lot. And actually, you know, my brother Chris, who runs a lot of events in Georgia, has actually used something along these lines too. I'm not saying, you know, you need to push your glasses up and say he started it first or anything, but I'm just saying
he's an innovator.
It's a really good idea. But really, so, you know, you roll off to see attacker defender, and then if I'm remembering correctly, the defender puts the first piece down, and then the attacker gets to put two pieces down. And just being able to do that, as I'm sure, you know, you can think about the management of the battlefield and how terrain just does so much. Being able to choose that, determine, well, I'm going to set the battlefield up by setting these two pieces down, and it's going to adjust this much. If I want to create firing lanes, if I want to adjust this or keep these pieces away from this or put this around objectives, so on and so forth, then I'm going to set it up like this. And there's a lot of benefits to that. You could really see how it played out. I know we've talked about there being like a mini game of terrain. Well, guess what? There's a mini game of list building, and I've also got Yahtzee mini game built in and all other kinds of little mini games in there. The terrain one, I totally buy. I am in 100% support of. I think that being able to like have your vote on the terrain is its own component. I still don't like standardized kind of like left, right, all the same kind of like, it doesn't matter what side of the table you approach, it's going to be standardized. I'm not personally a big fan of that. I either want it to be like hardcore thematic, where there's clearly like key terrain that whether it's in no man's land or someone starts with it or not, like that's just the terrain that was there and you get to roll off and determine it. Or if you're going to do player place, it allows you to have a vote and like, hey, this is, if I was going to deploy into terrain to fight off of, this is what I was going to have. And so they had that. And then on top of that, they also had a slight adjustment to towering in regards of ruins and how they obstructed, where ruins, and this is kind of a, in my opinion, you know, it's debatable on if it's two steps forward, one step back, or it's two steps back, one step forward, what have you, of how really, like, if it was obstructing ruins, it was obstructing ruins no matter what. Like, you couldn't see a towering unit through it, and a towering unit couldn't see you through.
Oh, so like infinite height ruins. Terrain.
Exactly.
Or whatever.
Yes, okay. Exactly. And so if you're on the other side of it, that's one, you know, it has that. As soon as you step into it, you can see through it, however.
So they didn't change the rule. They just altered the
terrain.
Like, their
terrain aspect, yeah, okay, yes.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, where I was going with that, like Eldari are nasty and some of these other things like Knights are nasty, but you... when you have terrain that performs the function that you need, it gets a little bit less like that way. And I think it's cool that they came about it with a creative solution that did not necessarily have to involve them switching out all their physical items to make it work.
Sure. Yeah.
I mean, Eldari still won, so what do I know? I just feel like it, you know, will give a better play experience with some of that, that type of approach of focusing in on how the terrain should work in this particular edition, or what types of terrain should be on the table in this edition.
For sure.
I don't know what the exact answer is, but I will just say that I think that terrain and terrain configuration and placement has a lot to do with the overall experience of playing this game right now.
Yeah.
I'm glad you had a good time.
It was awesome. Thanks for letting me share about it. I mean, again, like the opportunity to be able to play with people. I mean, you know, I've a whole group of people that I haven't had the opportunity to play with before. Love it about the events. I admit, you know, I've talked about it before in previous events where sometimes I'm not going to call it anxiety. That's not it. But I do have kind of this lurking concern all the time. And I think everybody to one degree or another has this where you're worried you're going to run into someone who may be a tryhard or something like that.
And, quote unquote, that guy.
Sure. Yeah, and I can say in all of my games I didn't. I was extremely elated with who I got matched up with, and I hope that they felt the same because that was my objective, and went out of that and had a great time and a great weekend. So it was awesome.
This coming up weekend, I'm going to be going to the ATC, the American Team Championship. It's in Chattanooga. It is about an hour and a half north from me, so it's a real easy drive. But as it's a team event. We've talked about it. Red, you've played on the team before. We know a lot of folks that are going to be there. And this year, the hobby requirement is a lot more relaxed because it's so close to the edition change. And I have felt some of that anxiety going into it of, my goodness, am I going to play the seas of the most degenerate gray army list, you know, that are possible. But I don't think that'll be the case. Now, look, let's take a quick break and then we'll come back and talk about that.
Awesome.
See you in a minute.
FTN is brought to you by Discount Games Inc. Please visit them at www.discountgamesinc.com. And don't forget to ask Jay about ways to save even more on your hobby projects.
We are back. So yeah, the ATC coming up this weekend, and it's a team event where you're basically playing on it with four other folks against another team of five players, and there's a matchup component to where you try to you put out lists, they match it up with two of their lists, you get to pick which one you want to play against. You're trying to get a favorable matchup, you know, attacker defender type stuff, trying to create these mismatches where you get a cascade of points and your opponents get none. That's basically how if you were drawing it up perfectly, that's what you want. It doesn't happen all that way. But so in the course of the list building phase, you may build a list that is not your standard list, or even something you might consider taking to just a singles event where you have to play, you know, 5 to 8, 9, 10 rounds of take all comers list. You have a little bit of craft in your matchups, again, looking for these lopsided matchups. And so people may, you know, take some kind of, you know, burly things and that they don't have just ready on their shelves. And so with a relaxed hobby requirement, I've actually been a little bit anxious about, I'm going to be playing a bunch of just powerhouse list with people trying to do the best for their team. And that's not a negative thing. That's exactly what they should be doing. You know, it said, but you know, part of going to these things is that experience of seeing a cool army, cool painted army on the other side of the table. And I'm wondering if that's going to be impacted. And the more I thought about it, I actually came out on the other side. It's like, no, while there that will most certainly exist to some extent there, by and large, that's not how we do things really as a community. Is that y'all's experience as well?
Yeah. No, absolutely. I mean, again, now we've seen it. We've seen it in a lot of what I'd argue more competitive events where there, you know, I've seen plenty of players, and admittedly, even this last weekend, I did not get my army to where I wanted to be. In fact, you know, Joe from War Games Live Streaming actually asked me if I wanted to come on and play World Eaters. But admittedly, I was disappointed in myself that I hadn't been able to get as far in the hobby as I wanted to. Yes, I had three painted colors, if not a little bit more here or there. Yes, I had, you know, basing and I had contrast on my bases and there was coloring to it, but I was not done with my army and I wasn't in a position where I wanted to share that. I did not want to like highlight my failure as a hobbyist to the extent that I was at least able to get there to play, which was more than enough, you know, for me to be happy and engaging with folks. But I honestly, I wish that I had been able to prioritize better and do a better job to get the army painted so that I could deliver that experience you're talking about to my opponent with a better painted army. And I think that there's something to that we sometimes struggle with when we go into these events. And I've seen other players that it's, you know, it's been loosely spray painted this or that or whatever, just so they can get it on the table. And well, I understand.
Like, jump in for value. A second. Is that better is a subjective term. Like you can tell when someone has tried to put their your army together. And most people do. That's kind of where I was at. I think most people actually do that. They want to do that. And because of the nature of this game, although you will get some folks where, and this is like you're in a outcome driven play experience at these events. Most people are trying, they'd like to win some games. I shouldn't say they're trying to win all the games. They'd like to win some games and somebody wants to go all the way. And sometimes there's the cross section of folks where the hobby side of it is not as important to them and they fulfill what is just the requirements that the tournament organizers, you know, put in the paper to get your 10 points, your 10 battle ready points or whatever. But I think that that by a large portion, the people that will try to still get nicely painted, good looking armies across the side of the table from whatever their opponents is the majority.
So I think that I'm like a relative newcomer to tournaments, but I've been to a few, and at least from what I've experienced, I think a lot of people put way more, they put more emphasis on winning best overall. I think that means more to a majority of people who go to the tournaments. That's just sort of been my experience, though. I have played against a few armies that did have some gray in them, because in my area, we're just trying to sort of build up like events and things like that. We're just trying to rebuild. And I don't have a problem with it personally, but that's really not like a common thing. And a lot of times those armies are not, they're not like min-max, they're not like optimized. It's just sort of like this is a newer person to the hobby and they tried their best, but they just couldn't quite get there in time. That's usually where the gray is from my experience.
And it's better to see them there on the day than not see them there.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I can get behind that. You know, with events too, like this is no, I don't mean to be talking about, you know, what an organizer should or shouldn't do. Like the organizers are, I fully stand behind them to be empowered to run whatever types of events with whatever restrictions or whatever they want to get the people in their area coming out and playing. Like I do think that events are the like a natural extension of our hobby in the next step, and have had such a blast over the years playing them and now being a part of them in some capacity, you know, that comes from somewhere. And sometimes it you might have to do it with a not fully painted army, and I think that's okay. But when it comes into these hard grindy games, I'm telling you, when you are just over there kind of getting your teeth kicked in, it's sometimes kind of cool to think, man, my opponent really painted a nice OSL effect or something, or on this power weapon that is chewing me up.
So I'm thinking about it going the opposite way. So I'm going to an event in a couple weeks, and I was like, okay, I could sit here and like stress paint every single day in the blaring heat of the summer to create something that's a little bit more competitive, Or what I could do is I could pull my favorite units off the shelf, put them on the table, and even if I lose, I can think, dang, I did a good job on this army. This sure does look good while it's still on the table. So that was like my whole philosophy with my army list going into this event.
It's with the ATC, it is a bit of a scramble. You know, it's a brand new edition change. You are playing things that you assign roles to people on the team sometimes, and because of those roles, you have to kind of align an army with to them, and so it may be an army that is either not something they have, not something they're familiar with. You might not have anybody you can borrow in your peer group or friend group or whatever. Not a borrow hammer that goes on for events like this, because it really is largely a competitive style event. Now you go there and hang out with your friends, and the way that as a very relaxed game schedule, so there's plenty of time to hang out with folks, which we're looking forward to. But you are kind of in this like weird kind of hobby space, and thankfully somebody on my gaming club is allowing me to borrow some of their models to where it actually reduced some of the hobby burden on my side.
Nice.
But because I am an over planner, I've still got all those models that I needed assembled and ready to go just in case.
Yeah, I always think that having like a plan B and a plan C is always a good idea, especially when you're relying on like other people to come through for you.
Well, there's travel involved, you know, and like part of one of the hardest things about a team tournament is having everyone on the team show up to play. And then when you add in the model component and that kind of stuff, you know, you can't be too careful. And so I mentioned it is within driving distance. So it really, you know, I can take a couple extra models that maybe not look as cool with me just in case as a failsafe. But I don't think I'm going to need it. But I just don't want to let the team down. You know, that's also part of this. You have like a really cool, almost like sense of obligation, but in a good way, to do your best you can for the team. And that's what I'm most looking forward to this coming up weekend, and finding cool places to eat.
And is anything piquing your interest in that regard?
So there is a taco place called Taco 423, I think is what it's called.
Okay, sounds trendy.
They serve like more authentic Mexican style.
Oh, now you're talking my language. Okay, go on.
But it is on the kind of like trendy, I don't want to say fancy side, because it wasn't fancy, was it? But it was a little bit.
I mean, it was a nice little place. I don't know if I'd say fancy, but it was a place that like I felt comfortable hanging out in general.
Yeah, like a trendy, you know, vibe, but with like upscaled, very authentic food.
Yeah, for sure.
So looking forward to that. And there's a place called Tupelo Honey near there, which we did not go to last year. I went to a place called Champy's last year and got some fried chicken and I don't know, weird. I shouldn't say weird. Some local appetizers. But you could either buy or just take off the wall these koozies for 40-ounce beers that they sold there. Like bottles of...
This sounds like an experience, honestly.
And you could draw on the koozies.
All right.
Look, you know, just experiencing some of the local culture.
I'd be into it.
Yeah. And then where the convention center is near kind of like the downtown city area of Chattanooga, which is not very... large, it's a small area, but they had like live music and stuff there last year. So with this relaxed play schedule, I'm hoping to walk through there and see if there's anything happening this week.
Sorry, just out of curiosity, what is considered a relaxed play schedule for an event?
Only two games each day.
Oh, snap.
Okay. Dang.
Listen to this. Grand Narrative last year in November, two games a day, 4 hours apiece.
Oh, amazing.
Right? That is vacation style playing right there.
And see, I got really excited because my next event that I'm going to had full 3 hour rounds, like not 2.5 hours, like full 3 hours. And I was like, spoiled. Let's go.
See, I do enjoy this spectrum though, because I think from what I've seen from 10th edition is if you wanted to, you could have, if it was two players really proficient and really pushing and trying to get things done, you can have games that get five turns in under 2 hours. And so I love the two a day, but I also think there is an argument for the spectrum of getting crazy and doing like four or five.
Get out of here.
And I like that we can do both. I like that you can do both maybe with this edition.
Sure. I'm cool with more games, you know, but you know, in a city that you're not familiar with, I think it's kind of cool to be able to get out if you want to do that, or just, you know, kind of chill. Like I said, I mentioned, you know, this is a very competitive event, but the spirit of the event is very much a team event. And so you've got you know, what is it, you know, 60, 70 teams or whatever. I don't remember how many are registered this year. And that's, you know, times five folks. And sometimes it's multiple teams of the same club. And of course, you know, half the people in the hall. So it's like a big old reunion kind of thing. So get a lot of time to hang out. I did decide to bring Knights.
Nice.
Yeah. I've got some games in. I was able to get some pretty good test games in. Against Eldari. So I'm used to the punishment and the pain.
I have a question about teams. You said sometimes that certain players will have to fill certain roles within the team. Is there like a player archetype that you're kind of looking to fill? Or does it kind of fluctuate on what you need based off the meta and whatnot?
That's a great question. And part of it is as a meta choice, you know, like, what do you need? Like, what is going to be strong? What do you expect to see? What is the top dominant list? And are there five dominant lists? And are you going to take those lists? Or are you going to take counters to those lists? And so that's part of the puzzle. In the mini game within the game where you're putting lists out, if you're putting someone out in that first position to where your opponents are always going to get the option of putting their best list about against whatever's put out, that person may actually have a series of very challenging games. And I mean challenging. They may lose a lot.
Sure. No, for real.
And having someone that can do that and still be capable of winning each game, as in being in the right headspace, like not get so defeated that they stop trying to win any game, is huge. And so sometimes you need to have a list that you can put out and someone that has the right personality type to be able to endure all that, those challenging games, just list-wise, not talking about like opponents or whatever, just, you know, play into a game where they are disadvantaged list to list.
And man, there's quite a lot of that out there at the moment. Like we're in the raw index days still, and maybe for several months to come. But so there is a lot of that. You gotta have somebody on your team who's down for that role.
Yeah. So that's a part of the picking who is what and who plays what list. Where you plan on slotting someone in to either the putouts or what they think they're good at matching up against. Sometimes you have to have a very like tough conversation with a player, like, hey, no, you really aren't good at playing against Astra Militarum. So like, no, we're not going to try to give you those matchups, you know. But you know, again, it's all part of the team dynamic, but you're looking at the list they brought, what their capabilities are, and then there is that kind of personality component to it. But more to come. We're going to report back on what happened at this event soon. By the time you're hearing this, we'll probably be playing in the event, and then next week or the week after, we'll have a recap of that. But I think for the back part of the show, we got to talk about that announcement about some Firstborn Marines.
Do we have to?
Well, I think it's important because this is something that, I mean, most of us have some Marines of some kind, and we know a lot of listeners out there have Marines of some kind. You know, what does this mean? Is this actually a blow, or, you know, are we going to get to a point where if you want to use these models to represent other models in the range, are we fine with that?
Yep. Nope. You're going to be fine with it. I think, man, that's something the community needs to bite down sooner than later. I acknowledge that GW is moving on in its own way. But like, you know, I was talking about my World Eaters and everything, and not because I'm like, you know, trying to be all blood angel-y about like other people are, but continuing to talk about my own army. But the
I did not mention that on this show.
No, but I felt the need to just go ahead and make that jab. I don't know why. I'm sorry. Anyways,
Adam's still here. You can talk to him that way.
Yeah.
I have 120 berserkers, right? That doesn't count the 40 new ones that I just made. Those 120 berserkers, as much as I love them and I've put a lot of work into them, they're in like Black Legion armor because I was running something like that, Chaos Space Marines, you know, out like 2017. I was running a ton of berserkers all over the place. I love them, but they don't look as good as the new berserkers. They just don't, right? The new kits they made. Go ahead.
Imagine, if you will, if they didn't. Right. If they brought out somehow, like, you'd actually have to work at it, I reckon, to bring out a kit with today's technology that is worse than those berserkers. Man,
I like the old berserkers.
I'd be impressed.
They did a great job with the new mold, the new cast and everything. It looks really good. I'm not saying I didn't, because I ran and painted and built 120 of them. I clearly was okay with playing them, because I won't touch things like orcs because I don't like the way they look, right? And so, I know, Tanya, that is my, semi-passive jab there. I get it.
no offense taken. But it's just, your opinion, man.
That's right. Keep there. Anyways, so to this whole Primaris / Firstborn thing, I mean, was anybody going to tell me, had I brought my fully painted 40 Berserkers to this last event, that I couldn't play them versus the new Berserkers, which are, they are significantly larger than the old ones, easily.
No one would have said anything.
Exactly. And I think we need to carry that forward with the Firstborn. They talked about it, the idea of bikes being used as outriders. I'm sure we just got to look at base sizes more or less. But people could still run old Rogue Trader Terminators right now. Those are still technically legit. And I don't think it's really fair to the hobbyists who have put the work in that if they're going to hold to the effort they put into those to just cut them out wholly. I understand the data cards may be essentially, we call it, whether it's squatted or legends at this point, but the translation to, do land speeders become ATVs? Because I just don't think that they meet Gladius kind of, or whatever the new Primaris version is, but that could they fit that? I think they could. I think they could make ATVs out of them or what have you.
So I have some questions about the models that they chose to do this on.
Sure. Yeah.
Because like you said, as a great one is the ones that they don't have equivalents for. And I guess they have equivalents for land speeders. They have equivalents for bikers. But the fact that they took these out and left the Vindicator.
Yo.
The fact that they... So forgive me if I'm wrong, but the Stalker and the Hunter, whilst... I'm not going to lie, very forgettable units for the majority of their release time, are significantly newer units and sculpts, same for Assault Marines, than the Predator, the Vindicator, many of the tank chassis, I guess, the Razorbacks, things like that. They really didn't get rid of any of those, and those things are significantly older and in some ways much more malign than some other units. Hell, I have a list in my battle scribe that has two units of Assault Marines in them, and I have a couple of vouchers to a friend of local gaming store from an event that I was thinking of going and getting Assault Marines with them. I'm not going to do that now. I'm going to wait for what I assume is an Assault Marine equivalent, because there isn't one just yet.
I got you, man. I got right. Plenty of Assault Marines I could loan out, give away.
yes exactly right. But it's just interesting that I was of the opinion that possibly could have been done years ago, or this could have waited many more years, so I don't really care. It was always in my mind going to happen. But interesting ones they selected. Has anybody... The Vindicator is extremely venerable. They should almost call it the Venerable Vindicator, because like the Dreadnought.
The Hunter and Stalker did surprise me.
Yeah, really? Like the Hunter and Stalker?
Me too. Am I crazy?
No, I think the Vindicator was absolutely should have stayed. I agree. The Hunter Stalker, honestly, space again, I go back to, and yep, I'm doing it. I'm
Space Marine privilege.
Yep. Pull. Space Marine privilege. We're keeping it. Okay. Because when I go to my World Eaters and I open up my data sheets and I've got two random Predators, but no Vindicator in there, I don't know what we're doing here anymore. Okay. I don't understand. I fought two Vindicators this weekend and I was like, man, those are awesome. I wish I could use them in the army that would love to have something that literally bulldozes bodies around the field and shoots into masses of groups of people. That sounds like a really awesome vehicle for World Eaters to have. And yet here you are trying to dog on it while we've got Stalkers and Hunters being kicked out of the fight.
Standard red propaganda.
What's right happening there right now?
I do just wonder, though, that if the desire to use those models, I think, you must put them on whatever their correct basing is or whatever, even if you were to even consider this.
I agree. I mean, all my World Eater Berserkers went from the old, what was it, 28 millimeter?
25.
20. Was it 25? Oh, man, that hurts even more. Is it to the, what, 30 or 32 now?
32.
Yeah, I put them all on, like, that. I literally just took them and put them on 32s, and then I used, like, astrogranite debris to level it off, and then I put a bunch of skulls on it. More skulls that were already on there. And, like, yeah, I had to upgrade to all the new bases. And I think that's, it's an unfortunate aspect of it, but that's what I thought was the most appropriate as far as, you know, if you were going to try and go into the game competitively.
I mean, just from a competition standpoint, is that, you know, when you are, we have stuff on the table, it's communicating with your opponent, you know, what the war gear is. The base size is important too, because there's like the whole physics of the game element kind of thing, but it's, I know that there's an aversion out there to allowing that type of stuff at events, but is it time to, you know, be a little more relaxed on that?
I mean, I think that there's some consideration that needs to be given. I do think that it's a TO specific thing. I think that different groups will probably have some slightly different opinions on that. As a whole, I do think that it's more in the realm of being lenient and understanding, and really like being able to appreciate where people are at in their kind of approach to the hobby, because we do have a lot of people that have been at this for a while, and it is a lot to ask in some cases to come back and be like, hey, yo, your entire army, rebase it. Thanks.
Yeah, well, thankfully, you know, something you can do over time. And then there's also the human element. You can have a conversation with an organizer, like, yo, I'm not going to be able to get to all these, but some of them are done or whatever. You know, what can I do, if anything? And they could have a hard stance, actually. You know, they could say tough. You know, it's got to be one way or the other. But at least have that dialogue, especially in this time, while people need to be shifting towards whatever the future is. Speaking of the future, this show's now in the past. That's our show this week.
Oh, snap. Man, it was going so fast.
Time has no meaning.
Time zones. It's poor Adam.
Wake up, Adam. It's time to go.
What? Sick.
Put your shoes on. Show. We're at Grandma's house. Let's go.
Did we do the thing?
We did it.
Good.
We made it all.
We made it, man. We made it.
Yay.
So thanks, everybody, for listening. This is episode 2 of season 2. We're rocking and rolling.
Awesome.
When next we speak, I will have some games to report from the ATC. Tanya, you can tell us about where you're at with your event prep coming up for that. Adam, you can tell us more about the WTC and what we're anticipating there.
Yes, it's going to be really exciting.
And then Red, you know, just keep on berserking.
I'm here.
We'll see you, everybody. Thanks a lot for listening. Leave us those 5-star reviews. Talk to you soon.
See ya.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Our craft worlds are sentient beings. These hosts are not. Better luck next time, monkeys!